listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Herrera's heroes save face for Mexico as they put one foot into next summer's World Cup. A fantastic 5-1 win in the Azteca means that El Tri could be back to the top of the pile in North America. Uruguay too looking to cement themselves at next year's summer tournament, and they got off to a fantastic start on the road against Jordan in their World Cup qualifying playoff. 5-0 win for the South American side. And I'm pretty sure somebody on World Football Daily predicted exactly that yesterday on the show. And finally, Eddie Johnson out of Seattle. Those are the rumours coming out of Major League Soccer. Will EJ, a diehard player for both the US men's national team and the Seattle Sounders, be elsewhere come next season? Welcome to Thursday's edition of World Football Daily. I am, of course, Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news, the many views from around the world of football here on this great football podcast. Joining me, as always, will be Rafa Gonzalez to talk about all things going on around the globe. There's some news we need to catch up on from earlier in the week that definitely needs to be said, including a big shout-out to Marcello Lippi, a legendary Italian coach. We'll be talking about him a little later on. We'll get into Clint Dempsey and his future and the impact he's had on the Sounders dressing room a little bit. A number of people, including the Sounders general manager, saying that maybe Dempsey hasn't had the impact on the dressing room that they hoped for, and what are his plans this winter. We'll decide where Dempsey should be going and what he should be doing now the Major League Soccer season is over for him. The Sounders have plenty on their plate with Eddie Johnson as well. We'll be tackling in a few minutes' time a bit of Italian football with our guest on the show today. And of course, there's plenty else to get into as well, including this Marco Reus venture from Manchester United. Apparently, according to sources at Dortmund, Marco Reus has already declined a move to Manchester City, turning down the opportunity to head to Manchester. And he's getting set to do the exact same thing to Manchester United. I guess one of the most sought-after prospects in German football, of course, made such a name for himself at Dortmund. An incredible season last year with them, helping them to the Champions League semi-final. Of course, he impressed so much as well before that during his time at Gladbach, of course, before that. But after only a year and a half, a number of people thinking they can steal him away from Dortmund come this summer. Might not be the case, though. However, it has been, as we said on yesterday's show, there is that release clause. So will Reus be heading away from Germany? Let's hope not. As I said yesterday on the show, I really hope not, because it's just one of those things where you see players getting dragged away for the money rather than staying around for the almost the iconic status that they could build themselves at a club, especially a club like Dortmund that have done so much to and been through so much to get to the place where they are now, of course, second place behind Bayern Munich in the German table. Gundogan, on the other hand, the other player linked with Manchester United, is looking for a way to get to Madrid, according to other sources. From Dortmund, the midfielder Gundogan is hoping that Real Madrid will be able to swoop in. And you just wonder, with Xabi Alonso rumoured to be off elsewhere this summer, and the fact that Khedira hasn't been a real battle axe in the heart of midfield. You wonder if Madrid could do, especially with young Illeramendi as well coming through, but obviously not being the finished article yet, with bringing in a player like Gundogan. Of course, Manchester United hoping that they could bring him in at some point this season.
Well, next season, I do apologise.
And you do just think Madrid might be worth maybe investing or having a little look, so to speak, at the Dortmund midfielder. That story, I'm sure, will continue to run and run as we get through the next few months, I guess, until the start of next summer's transfer window. There's plenty of stuff going on, and we will be covering Mexico and their fantastic 5-1 win against New Zealand, and of course Uruguay's 5-0 win, Luis Suarez causing controversy with another dive. Just hate to have it, seeing Suarez flop all over the place and players flop all over the place in general. And of course, we will be touching on the rest of the news. We do, though, have our guest ready and waiting for us on the line here today. I'm delighted to say that joining us to talk all things, a little bit of Italian football, especially the preview to Italy-Germany coming up tomorrow night, is a man who we haven't had on World Football Daily for a very long time indeed. Back on World Football Daily, it's Massimo Lopez Peña joining me. Massimo, pleasure to have you back here on World Football Daily, and a pleasure to have you to talk all things Italian football. How are you doing today, mate?
Very well. It's my pleasure to be on the show again.
It's our pleasure to host you, my friend. That is for sure. And especially to get your views on what has been a very good start, really, for Fiorentina. Slightly shaky at first in Serie A, but finding a rhythm once again. What have you, as a fan, as a football fan in general, made of this Viola start to the year?
I try to be as objective as possible. I was in Florence last Sunday to watch the game Fiorentina-Sampdoria. It's really enjoyable the way Fiorentina plays. I think I thought that with Prandelli, when Prandelli was the coach of Fiorentina, I saw the best of the team. But I think the game of Montella is even better. Especially because he's helped by the direttore sportivo, the general manager, Pradé, and all the people who helped Montella in setting up the team. They went to Spain to shop for players that really nobody wanted, that they had, as we say in Italy, cost zero. I make an example, the main example is Borja Valero. Borja Valero is a genius. If you see him play, you see a player that can, have great idea, great feet, great brain, great IQ, great way to run. He can defend. You find him all over the place, and he's absolutely great. It's unbelievable how the national team of Spain can do without him. Obviously, they have people like Xavi, Iniesta, Xavi Alonso. It's difficult to get on that team, at least in the roster. I don't know how he can be forgotten, honestly. I'm spending words on him because he is kind of a key of the team, a team that plays as a team. And now, of course, found Giuseppe Rossi, who could predict that after 2 years, after such a bad injury, he could come back in a few weeks at this level. He's a leader in goal scoring in the Serie A, something that is very difficult to achieve. I hope he's going to last in that position. But even if he's not going to win that standing, he's doing very well, and he can really help for the national team as well. I don't think Fiorentina, to finish the answer, I don't think Fiorentina can probably fight or be in competition for lo Scudetto, to win the championship. But I think they can really give their fans a lot of great moments. I would be glad just with that.
You mentioned, obviously, Montella very pleased with the style of football that he's playing, Massimo. But are you quite surprised as well that a manager with such inexperience before taking on the Fiorentina job in 2012 has been able to get this much out of a side so quickly and really look like an experienced coach at the helm of a big side in Italy?
I was very surprised last year. Honestly, when he came to Florence, I hoped he could be a good coach, but I didn't expect to see such a result. I mean, I remember him in Catania. Catania was playing a very good good game, but you know, it's always a big question mark when you get an inexperienced coach. I'm just thinking about Roma. Even Roma now found a fantastic coach in Garcia. But you know, before this year, thinking that Roma has had Montella in their hands and they let him go, probably I can imagine the disappointment of the people in Roma. But I'm glad to have Montella. I think he's probably right now. I think Fiorentina is probably playing the best football in Italy. That doesn't mean that it's the strongest team. Of course, Juventus, I think, is much better because they have probably more talent on the team, and Conte is a fantastic coach. But I think in terms of how the game is played, I think Montella is doing terrific.
You mentioned Roma there quickly, Massimo. I would like to just quickly ask you about them and their last two games. We obviously had this incredible start, the record-breaking start of 10 wins to start the Serie A season, but the draws, especially against Sassuolo, very surprising. Is this now going to be a big test coming back from the international break of their focus to get back to winning ways straight away? I think it's Cagliari they've got after the international break.
Well, it would have been a surprise if they could keep winning the way they start with 10 wins in a row. That is unbelievable. It's a record. It's unbelievable. Of course, you are surprised when you know the tie comes with a team like Sassuolo. You know, after especially being ahead in the game, that's certainly a big surprise. I think sometimes probably I'm not sure, obviously, but obviously it has something to do with the concentration. I mean, soccer is such a game, such an intense game. You cannot absolutely not take your eye off the ball. Meaning, Roma probably even they knew they had to beat Sassuolo. They probably went on the field absolutely to get the win. But somehow, probably you didn't put the same effort that you do when you go against a big team or in theory, more difficult games. That's probably what happened. I think this break came in perfect time for them and for other teams that need to recuperate people from injury. One team that comes to my mind is, of course, AC Milan, that has, you know, several players in the injury list. So, you know, like, but I was glad, to be honest. That's the beauty of soccer, when you see a team like Sassuolo that can absolutely go and tie, you know, with Napoli and Roma, and is pretty amazing. And that, I think, to repeat myself, is really the beauty of football. It's why we love this sport.
Well, I think the Italians love it to an extreme, maybe sometimes a lot more passionately than others, and at least show it. And that's why we always like discussing and getting into a bit of Italian football here on World Football Daily. That's for sure, Massimo. the Italian national team, of course, so close last year. Sorry, in 2012 at the Euros. Yeah, last year. I'm thinking we're in 2014 already, Massimo. And of course, cracking outfit at the Confederations Cup as well, especially considering how poor European sides do in South America. We've got the friendlies coming up and two tests against the African Cup of Nations winners, and of course against Germany this Friday. How seriously will Prandelli be treating these friendlies, or will he be again using them as a chance to maybe give the less experienced players a run out to see how they fit into the national team?
I think the chance to play in friendly games for the national team are so few that a game with Germany, you cannot treat a game with Germany, especially with Germany, as a friendly game. So Italy would put a great effort to beat Germany, as I'm sure Germany would like to beat Italy. You know that Italy and Germany has a great rivalry. Mm-hmm. For some reason, Italy has been always the bad team for Germany. And you remember, of course, the recent result in Berlin when we beat Germany in the semifinal. But we go back even in the past to probably years before before your time, when in 1970 we beat Germany for 4-3 in the quarterfinal. That was it remains one of the most historical great achievement that the Italian national team has done in their history. So to go back to your question, I think this is a great opportunity for Prandelli to try, you know, actually he's not going to try really new pieces. He's just trying to understand what he can do. And he's gonna the fact that he's playing a friendly game against Germany is gonna be kind of as I said before, as a serious game. So you're gonna have a great test. That's what you want as you are a coach of the national team, having all so few opportunities to test your team. So he's gonna go treating this game very, very seriously. Very important test. To ultimate the last details before going to Brazil next year. And if you remember what we were just 4 years ago, less than 4 years ago in South Africa, we were really a disaster. It was really a disaster. Nobody could even thought that we could get second place in the European Championship, qualify in this way, for Brazil, and really having a chance, being considered probably one of the favorites along with many other teams to win the World Cup next year. That's it. I think Prandelli did a great achievement in there.
Is that demon, so to speak, of South Africa 2010, is that still hanging over the Italian side, or did Euro 2012 do enough to end that from being almost a lurgy clinging on to Italy in major tournaments?
I think in South Africa were made many mistakes. I believe the mistake number one is I think after 4 years you have to change your coach. Doesn't matter what the results are. I think you need to get a different cycle. You have to go with somebody different. I think Lippi made certain mistakes in South Africa. We paid a dear price. Still, that bad result still hang in front of our eyes. Good, because it's going to be give us a possibility to do much better. The World Cup is always in some ways always a lottery. It's true that most of the time the best team or the best teams get to the semifinal, but the first group is always a difficult one, because it's psychological, mental. You can just screw one game and you face elimination. And that is always can always happen, generally, if you are good and you are confident, I think you can do well. I think in those years, Prandelli were able to find the game, to find the great players, young players, and instill a new type of game to change a little bit the philosophy of Italy, to try to have possession of the ball, something really never happened in our history. We are doing very well with that system. We got really confident, because we actually achieved results. I mean, getting in the final against Spain was a fantastic result. And I think we have to build from there. And I believe maybe we are not going to win the World Cup, because you need, to get injury-free. You need luck. But certainly we are starting the Cup to try to win that Cup.
What about the way that Prandelli, as you touched on it just then, the change that Prandelli has brought into this side, confident on the ball, composed and keeping possession, but also a lot more attacking than maybe what a lot of people around Europe expect from Italian football. Are we going to see that continue, do you think? Because the firepower in this Italy squad is pretty impressive.
I hope so, because that's the way I like football. I mean, I am a big, big fan of Spain and Barcelona, because the way they possess the ball, they have possession, the way they play is in some way the Italian game now resemble a little bit, or we try to resemble a little bit that type of philosophy, the possession, to have never throw the ball away. You see, even in the defense, when we have the ball, sometimes even in an exaggeration, we probably take some risk. But we try never to throw the ball away, the long pass that used to be the typical game in Italy, you know, sometimes from defense to attack, trying to win this game in the counter-attack. We still do that. We can still do that pretty well, but with Prandelli and, for example, if you see Fiorentina with Montella, that's a kind of a change in the Italian philosophy. Then you see other teams, for example, in Inter in some way, still play in a kind of a defensive and trying to counter-attack. But hopefully many more teams are going to get the same ideas of Prandelli and Montella and try to play in the way you are seeing now. It's kind of I would say, a philosophical change.
It's just finally, Massimo, the midfield of Italy is still one that's populated by a number of players reaching or getting to that over 30 point. Pirlo, De Rossi, Diamanti, Motta. Are they at this, after this World Cup, is this now a time for Italy to start thinking about taking these guys out of the side completely and bringing in that young, fresh blood, do you think?
You still have fairly young people. I mean, you have a good exchange, especially in the midfield. Now we have Montolivo, is not that old. We have Marchisio, which is still kind of a young guy. Of course, De Rossi probably with this World Cup is going to be done. With Germany, probably Thiago Motta will start, and probably he's done too. Obviously, Pirlo. I would probably keep Pirlo forever. You know, if his legs are gonna. He's a genius. He's just an incredible player. He knows when he gets the ball. Before he gets the ball, he knows already what to do with the ball. That's typical of the big great champion. And he's a genius. If our national team play well, you know, I would say that our game, the way we play, it depends very much on how Pirlo is playing. Most of the time, when he's not in a good day, we are not going to have a good day, the whole team.
Well, let's hope, Massimo, that Italy are having a good day and Pirlo's having a good day, because he is obviously one of the greatest players in the world to watch do his thing on a football pitch. And we wish you and Italian football the best of luck, especially taking on the Germans from all us English folk, that's for sure. And taking on Nigeria as well next week. Massimo, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show, mate. We look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed, my good man. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Massimo, they're joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Italian football, touching on a bit of Serie A and, of course, the Italian national team as well. Massimo Lopez Pena, a very good old friend of World Football Daily, and delighted to be chatting with him once again on the show, giving us his thoughts. So much passion, isn't there, when talk to somebody, especially with the Italian accent, you know, it does bring it out a fantastic amount. You look at the squad, though, Italy have got, you know, Buffon, 35. Machetti, the Lazio keeper, 30. You know, Sirigu is surely the next in line to take Buffon's crown away, so to speak, as the Italian national keeper. You look at Barzagli, 32. Maggio, 31. Obviously, Pasquale has not had the same amount of games, obviously only three caps to his name as an Italian national team player. But there is a number of players in this side that you do think just maybe getting on. Pirlo, as Massimo said, you know, everybody wants to see him go on forever and ever if his legs can, but they are going to give up at some point. Daniele De Rossi can't be as effective in the heart of that midfield with the style of play that he has. He's going to surely become like that Paul Scholes as the legs go, picking up yellow cards for slightly later challenges than they would have been. Diamanti, Motta, these players are guys that aren't going to be around for much longer. I'd love to see, you know, Florenzi coming in and Candreva obviously getting more and more appearances in the next few weeks. Andrea Poli as well from AC Milan. Just to give this young blood, obviously, Marco Verratti, we want to see more and more of the PSG player. And similarly up front, you know, I want to see Lorenzo Insigne, Osvaldo, these guys getting more game time. You know, of course, Mario Balotelli will be leading the line as always. Giuseppe Rossi, we love seeing him back. You know, Gilardino's in there as like the old head to calm things down, I guess, in that front line. That front line for Italy is, of course, a fantastic looking front line indeed. I'd like to see more of that youth coming through in Italy. They started to do it. They, obviously, as El Shaarawy still to come back from injury as well. And you've got Matteo Di Scicchio from AC Milan as well to possibly come in and do a job as these kind of 20, 21-year-olds who can play and play that new kind of attacking style of Italian football. And I'd really like to see that come to fruition, come to the forefront even more than it has started to under Prandelli over the last few years or so. Big thanks there to Massimo for joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Italian football. Cracking guy. Love the accent, Raf. You got to love that accent, right? Italian, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it just sounds...
It sounds so much more authentic. Cool. You know, just love it, man. I just love it.
It's a cool sounding accent. There's so much passion mm-hmm. in an Italian accent, you know, in the right Italian accent, you know. please, I'm not trying to be any sort of stereotype there or anything like that. Please don't hate on me for that terrible Italian attempt there. Let's move it away from Serie A, Raf, and I think I need to ask you a big question.
Yes, sir.
A very big question. Of what exactly did you sell? Was it your soul to the devil? To give
I
you
know.
These predicting abilities here for this season, because you, Raf, not only keep on crushing it and I know the score, but like yesterday, you know, at the end of the show, like the last thing you say, oh, Uruguay, well, it'll be 5-0, I guess. They're away from home, be 5-0. And I have a look at the score and boom, what are we looking at? 5-0. I mean, ridiculous, Raf. Have you got inside information? Have you got are you just riding like in Vegas? Like, you just got a hot hand at the moment? You're just letting it ride? Let it ride.
I am.
Are you not tempted to get down to bookies at some point?
I can't even say it's blind luck. It's a fool's insanity, really, Juice, is what it is. Because really, I fool myself into believing my score predictions. You know, I legitimately have reasons why I picked that. You know, that those score lines, and in my mind, I play out these games already. So, it is a bit of a fool's insanity going on here, and blind luck, you have to say, because I mean, if anybody knows me and the show, I've been working on it for over 3 years now, Juice, and this is definitely, like, you know, my best year in IKTS. I've been playing IKTS for well over 5 years, because I've been a listener to the show for a long time. So yeah, I've played IKTS for over about 5 years now. And this is definitely the most successful year I've probably had all time, already even. I mean, if we cut it right now, Juice, I'm pretty sure this is the best I've ever done in IKTS. And I have gotten some really interesting predictions recently. You've had yourself a couple, you know. I think you called the Newcastle match last weekend. But, I mean, in general, yeah. It's just fool's luck, Juice. Don't listen to me, because what's going to happen is people are going to start putting money on it again, or you know, thinking that I actually know what I'm talking about.
What will happen is you'll have an awkward day when you get an email in from a listener that says, "Raf, I can't believe you did this to me. I bet my wife and my my house on your predictions, and I've lost it all, Raf. I've lost it all. The wife's left me. The kid's gone." I've got nowhere to live. I'm living on the floor of my friend's house at the moment. You know, it's all because of you, Raf, and your damn predictions. Why did you fail me? And it's going to be really awkward, and you're going to have to do like an on-air apology, and, you know, oh, I'm really sorry. Oh, you know.
And yeah, well, I mean, here's your disclaimer now. Do not listen to anything I say, really. I don't know what I'm talking
ever,
about.
Ever, ever, in general. Yeah. Anything Raf says.
Never listen to anything. I like to make things up. I like to exaggerate stories. In general, yeah, like I said, make up stories. So don't listen to me. I'm not worth putting any kind of money on, really. But yeah, no, I'm getting really lucky this year, Juice, and I'm pretty excited about it. And it does make you feel kind of like, hey, maybe I do know what I'm talking about. It is very shocking. To feel, Juice. Very shocking.
Talking of extraordinary bets, this was something that I read on CNN the other day. Oh yeah, I read CNN, you know, not just delving through the tabloid journalism. I like to go up market every so often. And I was reading an article about the Man United Arsenal game recently. Obviously, United winning 1-0, Van Persie's header, everybody uproar about his celebration, and yada, yada, yada. It's great to see a footballer celebrating again. Rather than just being, oh, I'm really sorry I scored against my own club, when in fact it's, yeah. But anyway, there's two chaps, and I can't remember off the top of my head where it was in Africa somewhere. They had a little gamble on this game. And one of the chaps did put his house on the line. The other chap put his wife, and I believe it was a large sum of money, on the line. And the guy who bet his house lost. But not only that did he lose, he didn't get the opportunity to do the ha ha ha, we were only joking, ha ha ha, because a gang of United fans came up and they signed a piece of paper and they came to his house and kicked him out of his own house. And now he is homeless because of this bet that he made with somebody else over this Manchester United-Arsenal game. I mean, I don't understand why you would ever... We all joke about it. Oh, I put my house on that. Oh, I put, you know, this and that. I put £1 million. And then at the end of the evening, you end up saying, yeah, okay, I'll put a fiver on it with you or something stupid like that. I remember I put £5 last year on Chelsea to win the title and Fernando Torres to be the top scorer in the Premier League. And that that kind of backfired in my face quite a bit. And that was with a friend after an argument at the beginning of the season. Especially, it was after the Charity Shield game, actually. Sorry, the McDonald's Community Shield game. And I'd said, look, I'm telling you, Torres is back. He's had a great preseason. He looks good in the Community Shield. This is Torres all the way this year. And he was like, no way, blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, that ended up happening. So those ridiculous bets. But to actually be forced to go through with it, this poor guy is now homeless. I've honestly never heard of a bet like that, except for maybe the guy in Vegas that got the bet $100,000 to get women's boobs implants on him, and he did, and then he kept them afterwards. Ridiculous. What are the weird bets that you've done with people over football? Let's see what comes out here. I'm hoping there's no kind of breast implant ones or anything like that, or anything too outrageous, because I just feel sorry for you guys if you've ended up being on the losing end of that. But what are the weirdest footballing bets that you've made? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, and the Facebook page as well.
I mean, surely Juice, you have a 5-a-side team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you've made the odd bet like 1 week saying, oh, you know, next time I see you, I bet you that, you know, Real Madrid will beat Barcelona in El Clasico or something like that. And you lose and you have to, like, you know, stand in front of the goal, turn around, bend over, and let them take a pot shot at you. But I'm trying to think of other kind of soccer related bets that I've put out there.
It's like the ones, you know, you say, oh, I bet you, like the weekend or something, you know, I bet somebody beats whoever, and you end up putting like a pound bet on it or something stupid like that, or there's ones on the evening, like there was a really good one a few weeks ago. I was down watching a Real Madrid game with my friends, and one of them said, I bet you a dirty pint that that Ronaldo puts this in. And I said, I take that bet. I bet he doesn't put the free kick in. Bet you he doesn't. Ball goes in, over the wall, goes over, and this my friend ends up having to do a dirty pint, you know, so it's got like Tabasco sauce in and stupid stuff like that. But it's those sorts of things that that you do either on, you know, the spur of the moment on the evening, or there and there over like a season or something like that. You make those early season gambles,
That seems like an encouragement bet, you know, like a drinking encouragement bet.
Very much so. That sort of thing is very much that sort of, that style of bet. But there's also, as I say, the ones where you say, okay, I bet you X, Y, or Z, you know, I bet you Chelsea win the league this year. And if they don't, I will run naked through my, down the high street or something like that. you know, just silly things like that. So let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com and at WFootballDaily on Twitter are the fastest ways to get your crazy footballing bets across to us. There's some other news that we need to clear up, Raph, before we talk about Mexico last night, and obviously the future of Clint Dempsey is something I want to get onto as well today. First and foremost, a big shout out. It kind of pains me to do this, but a big shout out to Marcello Lippi, legendary, iconic Italian coach, who has become the first manager to lead two different sides to two different Champions League titles. Guangzhou Evergrande, Chinese outfit. Chinese football has been rocked by match-fixing scandals over the last 18 months or so. It's a fantastic achievement for this side, especially, and to bring a ray of hope, if you will, to Chinese football. But Marcello Lippi's in charge of Guangzhou Evergrande, and they won on last weekend. Managed to beat FC Seoul in the AFC Asian Football Cup Champions League final. So, big props to Marcello Lippi for pulling that off, man. Very impressive indeed.
That is impressive, absolutely, man. If only he could maybe come and take over one of these MLS sides and steer them to a CONCACAF Champions League. I mean, you know.
I'm just thinking Herrera. Herrera's doing a good job with Mexico. He takes that job on full time. Suddenly, Club America, they need a manager. The next season, Lippi comes in, takes them to the CONCACAF Champions League final and wins it. That's all. Yeah. Bold and crazy predictions, ref. Do you want to put a bet on that? Do you want to put a bet on that one? Huh? Exactly. That's what I mean. Big congratulations to Marcello Lippi, as I say. Incredible. Incredible manager. And big congratulations as well. The 2013 NASL champions are once again New York Cosmos. Their first title in the NASL. Back to the top of the pile, the Cosmos. How bad is this that they win the NASL just after it's been announced that New York City are being the new franchise in New York?
Because in their first year back as well. It's, I mean, there's a lot of kind of interesting storylines. I mean, I'm not too familiar with the NASL setup, so let's not crucify me here. But I think there's like some like two kind of not leagues, but like seasons or something, and then the winners of those seasons play in the Super Cup, La Bowl, something like that. So New York basically missed out on the first season or something. I don't know. I'm not sure
There's a winner of the spring season, and there's the winner of the fall season, and they meet in the NASL Soccer Bowl.
Soccer Bowl.
Yeah, which is a horror. Oh, that sounds really bad. Even saying that, it's kind of cringeworthy. It sounds, but fair enough to the Cosmos. But isn't it? You know, we've wanted to see the Cosmos, Rafa. Well, I don't know about you, but I definitely want to see the Cosmos back in Major League Soccer. And I was I've been discussing it a tiny bit on Twitter in the last few days, with our man Grubik, who appreciated apparently the shout out, so he's getting another one here as well. You lucky man, Grubik. But he kind of said, you know, it's fantastic for Major League Soccer. And I said, yeah, isn't it a shame that, you know, the Cosmos aren't going to be in Major League Soccer because of this?
It just makes you wonder, Juice. I mean, it makes you wonder what went wrong, because it seems like it was so.
With the money, as Grubik said on Twitter with me the other day, you know, he said he thought it would be the Cosmos, and actually it's just, you know, the money that gets thrown out. He also said that there is no way he can ever back, as a Manchester United and New York Mets fan, he can ever back a Manchester City Yankee franchise. I mean, that just makes it worse, doesn't it, for him? If you couldn't find love with the New Jersey-based New York Red Bulls, if you're really being a true New Yorker, and that, you know, hey, no way, man, they don't play in New York, they play in Jersey, they're the Jersey Red Bulls. if you couldn't find your love with that, you're thinking, all right, I'll get behind this New York City franchise. Oh, it's Manchester City and the Yankees. Oh, pass. Yeah, pass. Yeah. I am out on that one.
Back to the NASL.
Yeah. Oh, mate, that's what it's all about these days, man. NASL Soccer Bowl Championships. That's what it's all about. Very big congratulations to the New York Cosmos indeed. Marco Senna is there, believe it or not. Such a tidy pickup for them.
A very integral player. I've read several of the press releases as they come out through this past season. So, a strong player. And they're signing a lot of the same players back, so should be finding the same success come next season.
Talking of finding success, we mentioned it. We mentioned Mr. Herrera at least earlier in the show. Mexico, you picked the right score for Uruguay against Jordan. yesterday, I was a bit tentative in giving Mexico too much love, despite what Kim was saying earlier on in the week, but despite what you were saying as well, Raf, I really did think. That although it's an almost inexperienced New Zealand side, that they would still be able to put up some sort of a fight. But I tell you what, dominance in the Azteca, complete dominance in the Azteca. But it raises a very kind of important question, is that they've picked a number of Club America players that obviously know how to play with each other and that are on form. Now, should other national team managers be almost looking at what Herrera's done with this Mexico side and saying to themselves, team chemistry over big name quality
trumps just about everything else? Yeah,
does it? I mean, we always say that every dog has its day, and that's why, you know, team chemistry in those big cup upsets and whatnot can be a big factor in those sorts of games. But do you think overall that team chemistry, especially at the international level, where sides can be a little disjointed, and obviously you look at the Spain side, majority of the players in from Barcelona and Real Madrid, there's that chemistry there. You know, half the team may hate the other half of the team in that sense, especially on club days. But as a national team, they come together and they both, there's both, for both kind of sets as players, there's a lot of chemistry going on between those guys. So they know how to play with each other wonderfully. We've seen the heights that they've gone to. You look at a side like Holland, though, you know, a side who are meant to be performing well, meant to be on the top of their game, and people expect a lot more from at most international competitions. A lot of those players fragmented around Europe don't have that same sort of chemistry of playing in the same league, let alone in the same team, generally underperform. Do you think at the international level, managers should be looking more at team chemistry? And does this mean, Rafa, to bring up the final point, should the trio of Southampton be playing for England this weekend? For this Friday and Tuesday, for chemistry alone?
Well, I mean, for chemistry alone, perhaps. And I mean, I'm sure you caught the game. If not, many of you listening have at least caught the highlights. Just some of the play. I mean, it was very familiar of Mexico of old. Like, it was fluid play, clever, tricky play. You know, not necessarily showboating, but just confidence, you know, like they looked confident on the ball. They looked like they had played together, and they looked like they knew what they were doing going forward and playing as a team. Did you see that one attempt on goal or strike on goal by, what was it? Peralta, man, or Jimenez, where he flicked it with the back heel
from Jimenez. Yeah, man. I mean, if the guy wanted to top his bicycle kick from the Costa Rica game, from the Panama game, that would have been the way to do it. A magnificent save from Moss getting down to his left. I mean, that was a fingertip save to stop that going in the bottom corner. It wasn't like it was he's flicked it and it's kind of near the keeper. That was a cracking save from an even better attempt. The audacity.
Talk about reaction. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, it could have got out of hand. For sure. But yeah, and I really like that argument, Juice, that, you know, maybe it might be Mexico might be kind of ushering in a new idea, mentality heading into the World Cup, and not so much to be focusing on, you know, stars playing abroad or, you know, playing in big leagues, but like you said, team chemistry. If this is what's possible against, well, this is what is possible against New Zealand. I think, you know, the result kind of reflects what should have happened, I think. I mean, generally, when you think of Mexico versus New Zealand, and when you think of the Azteca, I was a little shocked to see the goal go in, but, you know, chalk up to a little bit of arrogance, perhaps. But seriously, they should be. I mean, you're expecting Mexico to go to New Zealand now and kind of hold their own. My prediction right out the gate is probably going to be 3-1 Mexico, and that's only because they're going to take the foot off the gas a little bit and maybe screw around
you still got to take altitude into the fact, obviously, the New Zealand players turned up only a day or so before the game, which was just ridiculous to me. Absolutely ridiculous to hear that they did that. So I think you need to take a lack of preparation on their part and their own fault, really, into consideration. I think you've got to take the time difference as well. I mean, when Mexico go down to New Zealand, that's going to be a hell of a shock to their body clocks. And if I were them, I would be on a plane now. You know, getting down to New Zealand, I'm not entirely sure if they have gone yet or not, but I would, if I was Herrera, I'd be like, all right, game's over. You know, it'd be like an NBA team or a NFL team or whatever, you know, maybe not the NFL, they don't play day after day, but yeah, an ice hockey team or an NBA team, like, right, we're on the plane, we're going down, we are getting adjusted so that by the time you get down there, by the time it's game time, you are 100% on New Zealand time, you're in New Zealand mode, and we can take it to these guys. You know, and I think for Mexico, it's important for them, after the disaster that has been their World Cup qualification process over the last kind of 8 months or so, 6 months or so, to go down in New Zealand and put in another big performance like they did last night. You know, the New Zealand side looked all out of shape, you know, struggling at set pieces, weren't keeping possession at all, didn't look like they wanted to keep possession in any way, shape or form, and really kind of hoped to hit on the counter-attack, especially in the early minutes when all scores were level. But for a side that needs to put on a big show, Mexico did what they needed to do. They put on a hell of a performance. They really got at New Zealand straight from the get-go, chance after chance after chance, and really it could have been 7-8 yesterday in the Azteca. 5 will do, I guess.
Well, I mean,
They'll be disappointed by the clean not having a clean sheet as well to finish up the game. But Mexico now should go and put a stamp and say, hey, look, you know, we messed up in the hexagonal big time. We were underperforming like anything. But you bring somebody like New Zealand in front of us, almost kind of getting a little street. You know, you bring someone like New Zealand in front of us and think we're going to struggle? Nah, man. We're going to put these guys down. And that's no offense to a good friend of the show, Jeremy Brockie, who we've stayed in contact with since his time in Toronto. Of course, back with Wellington Phoenix now and played 4 games since his return from Toronto. But yeah, I do, and I do feel sorry for him because you know, he was on the losing end last night. That's for sure. But that New Zealand side could be in for a real pasting. I think Herrera's got to get his side, got to get that Mexico side just firing on all cylinders, because they've not got long until the World Cup. And if they're going to be there, they need to be showing and putting out the fear of God back into everybody that Mexican football, actually, after all the success of the youth that they had, is actually here to make a point and to stick around and to put in a decent performance in the World Cup. And getting big wins will be the way to do it.
Can I tell you where I watched the majority of this match?
Mexico?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I want to tell you where I watched the majority of this match.
Did you watch it in Mexico?
Oh, no. No, sir. But, I mean, it kind of felt like it a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
That would have been better.
I was just around the corner from the Orange County Airport at a local Del Taco right down the street from my work.
Oh, my
God. And what they do is, you know, obviously it's a primarily Mexican staff working behind the counter. On big games that they find interesting, so, for example, El Clasico, they will actually put a television feed into one of their monitors up in the front kind of like waiting area. And that way they can watch the soccer game, basically.
So you stood in Del Taco.
So I literally stood in Del Taco's lobby while people were getting their orders, you know, number 65, 65.
Oh, my goodness.
Please, por favor, 65.
Oh, I mean, I know this
I'm sitting there, you know, and I'm watching this. And so for example, when that wicked kind of back heel, you know, kick, Zlatan-style-esque, you know, attempt goes on, I kind of go, whoa, you know, like, I react. And so does the rest of the you know, the staff.
There's a guy in the back. A guy in the back at the fryer who's suddenly got like oil burns all over him. He's like, oh,
hey, what happened, man? Yeah. So it was interesting. It was fun. I think I caught about I definitely caught the first half, and I caught the majority of the second half, and that's how I watch my soccer, I guess, these days, with the people at Del Taco, man.
Very,
and, you know,
very, very almost, it could sound like a very lonely, depressing story, but I'm going to choose to take the light of it and say that, yeah, great, man, getting some good-ass Del Taco food. Love that.
Man of people.
Man of the people, out watching football with you, the people, Rafa, to get the thoughts and views of the locals in Orange County as they get into soccer of ball. Raf, before we go quickly, I need to chat with you about Clint Dempsey. Seattle Sounders manager Adrian Hanauer coming out and saying that Dempsey had an impact on the dressing room and maybe not a positive impact as well. What do you make of him talking about Dempsey's impact on the dressing room? It very much implied that he wasn't talking that it was maybe a kind of a negative impact, I felt.
Potentially an attitude, you know, like whether or not like Dempsey comes in and is quote unquote Billy Big Boots. You know, I hate saying that, but it's a great little
Billy Big
way to describe the situation. You know, he comes in and one, he might think he's above everybody else, and that kind of gives everybody, you know, the cold shoulder. not necessarily bonding with the, with his team. Obviously, the attention that he gets is way more than the rest of the team. More than Amiobi got, for sure. Just saying. I understand the language barrier and such, but anyways, I can see it in a lot of ways. I mean, you know how I feel about Clint Dempsey. I really do think that the U.S. team can be better oftentimes without Dempsey, or even bringing Dempsey on as a sub, because then you make him, you know, come on. I don't know. I would use Dempsey as a sub, not necessarily as a starter, because I don't like his attitude. I don't like the way that he approaches the game. I like players who are playing, you know, around the clock, basically.
Well, and
playing
the full game. He's pulled out of the U.S. men's national team as well for the games against Scotland and Austria. Dempsey and Fabian Johnson both pulling themselves out of the game. They won't be replaced by anybody else, by Jürgen Klinsmann, who now takes 21 players into these two friendlies coming up.
I think that says a lot, by the way, Juice. I mean, yeah. I think that says that he's got the people he wants to kind of test it out, now, and he's not necessarily in any kind of rush or need to look around for any more talent before in the last minutes.
Now, Dempsey's looking around for a place to go out on loan during the summer. He's got it written in his contract, during the winter, that he is able to, once the Major League Soccer season is finished, go out on loan, maybe go back to the Premier League. Apparently, Tottenham are looking at bringing him back, which very much surprises me. Fulham are also very interested. I'm sure they would love to have him back down at Craven Cottage, especially at this moment in time, to provide some service with Berbatov and the legend that Dempsey created for himself down at Fulham. Would you see Dempsey fitting in? Because, of course, we were all talking about the big move before he went to Tottenham when he left Fulham. We're talking about Liverpool. We're talking about possibly Arsenal. We're talking about Spurs. Obviously, his stock isn't as high. That's why people like Fulham and West Ham as well think they can actually get him back. Where would you think Dempsey could land? Do you think it would be elsewhere apart from the Premier League, or do you think a return to England is the first step? I don't see him going to a Manchester United. I don't see him going to Liverpool and upsetting the balance that they've got at the moment, Arsenal.
I seriously think that he could go to Liverpool. I think that him and Brendan Rodgers could get on the same wavelength, or that Brendan Rodgers could sweet-talk him enough. Yeah, you know, get him sipping the Kool-Aid.
I don't think Liverpool would want him, though. Not at this moment in time. They've got Coutinho coming back. They don't want to upset that balance that they've got with Sturridge, Suarez, and then Coutinho playing off them with, say, Henderson and Gerrard playing behind them with the wing backs and the three at the back. I think Dempsey would come in and would affect that too much. You'd be forced to. Dempsey would sit on the bench behind Coutinho until he got injured again, pretty much, I think. The team I'd like to see him go to, actually, and it's not just because they've got one of my favourite players in the Premier League at the moment, but Everton. I wonder, just, you know, playing off Lukaku, feeding those balls into Big Rom, and also taking some of the pressure off Lukaku by taking up defenders' attention himself. I just wonder if Everton could be interested. I know teams like West Ham, I'm sure Norwich would love him. Those struggling down at the bottom, at the foot of the Premier League, would love to bring him back in. I'm surprised that Tottenham want to bring him back in, because how he underperformed at Spurs and how they've got so many central attacking midfielders. But Dempsey to Everton is where I reckon they should be looking. For him to land this winter, as the Major League Soccer continues. The Sounders apparently thinking of shipping off Eddie Johnson as well. A ridiculous move in my part. Such a big player in that second half of the season. When Dempsey came in, Johnson started.
You're looking at the wrong position at that point. For solving your problem. I think you need some harder defenders, maybe a little more backbone in the midfield.
Well, it doesn't even solve any problems. The fact of the matter is that it would make the Sounders a worse side without EJ in there. I know they've had Obafemi Martins injured, and he's obviously had a great start to his MLS career when he was playing at the start of the season, but I'm telling you right now, EJ was such a big player for Seattle. That pay me sign, though, maybe tipping the scales against him in terms of sticking around in Seattle. The Sounders apparently shopping about to see if they can ship him off anywhere else, international or local otherwise. That is all from us here on Thursday's edition of World Football Daily. A top shout to Herrera and El Tri after a fantastic performance yesterday evening, and to Uruguay, despite the diving, cheating Luis Suarez once again trying to flop all over the place as usual. But what do we expect, eh? It happens so much in the Premier League. Anyway, diving, we need to get rid of it. Let us know your thoughts. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is, of course, our rant line. Remember to catch us on the Facebook page as well. Where do you think Dempsey should return, and what are your favourite footballing bets that you or your friends have placed with each other? Let us know. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow to take a look at Zlatan versus Ronaldo on Friday's edition of WFD as we get set for the rest of the World Cup playoffs. And by the way, tonight there's a cracking friendly on that everybody should try and watch if they can. Belgium against Colombia. Really looking forward to see what happens in that one. Take care, enjoy the football, and we'll see you at the same time tomorrow. Have a good one.